Well, we're talking this evening on the Women's Issues, Women's Voices, about the importance of women tapping into their creative selves and different ways to do that. And so I've found different teachers for myself to do that, and you're one of my very favorite teachers with your Painting from the Source.
Thank you.
I've just told the audience about your the workshop I attended in the Virgin Islands, and we're expecting you to come to Columbia in a month to do a workshop here, and I'll have more information for listeners about how they can find out about that at the end of the show.
I'm really looking forward.
Well, we're anxious to have you here.
Great.
Say what Painting from the Source is all about. Just give us kind of an overview.
Okay. Well, there are two levels of Painting from the Source. One is that it's a name that I have given to what most people refer to as the natural God-given creative process that we all are capable of and that we all tap into, especially as children in this culture. In other cultures, people tap into it in more indigenous cultures all their lives. And then it's also a name that I gave to a process that I developed to help people who have been alienated from that wonderful creativity to get back to it. And it's a very getting back to a place of being a child again, being a healer, non-judgmental, mm-hmm. and using very childlike materials, tempera paint, paper, the kind of a paint we use in kindergarten. And also, if some people are familiar with the word process painting, it's painting for process rather than a goal. It's tapping into the inner dream self while you paint, not copying anything.
Well, say more.
Anybody can do it.
Say more about what the source is. What does that mean?
Well, for me, it's a word that covers many words. You could say painting from God or painting from Goddess, painting from the unconscious, painting from the collective unconscious, which Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychologist, talks about, that place of universal images and myths that is true for every being, no matter what culture we are born into. I also see it as the energy that, I see the source as the energy that started the whole universe in motion. So it's this repository of magic that and mystery that still lives, no matter who we are or where we are.
And so you have a process by which you help guide people to tap into the source, however they identify the source.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so let's just kind of talk about what that process is.
Okay. And Royda, from your memory of being at a workshop, please jump in also.
Okay.
Well, the first thing is to create a place that feels safe. The guidelines, one of the guidelines in the workshop is that no one makes any comments about anyone else's painting, even a positive comment. Also, no one who is not in the workshop comes into the room at any time. So, another guideline is that during the workshop, we don't speak about the art world or art school. We don't use terms like balance or composition. We don't talk about our favorite famous artists. It's really a combination of a kindergarten class where there are no criticisms to anything people do or say about themselves, about their personal life, and also a combination of being in kindergarten and being on a native island somewhere that is far away from civilization, where we pretend that we are natives. who have just grown up in this culture, totally off the grid. So that creates the groundwork of safety.
So the safe place is the first place to start.
Exactly. Then making it sacred, because when we are creative in this authentic way, this natural way of tapping into the dream place, unplanned, we also, in my estimation, in my feeling, are tapping into the greater source of creativity, are tapping into, we're praying. For me, channeling these images on paper and these colors is the deepest way to pray. Also, dancing spontaneously, writing a poem spontaneously, singing a song, making up a song, all forms of creativity. So what I do is we light a candle. I have an opening prayer that's very, it has nothing to do with anybody's religion. It's just a general prayer to the source and to the Great Spirit to support us as we open our vulnerable creative soul self up to this universal energy and to guide us.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a little altar, and people bring things that are sacred to them, to the altar while we paint. And then I guess the third thing is keeping it childlike and simple, purposely not using archival materials. Very simple paper, tempera paint, very inexpensive. Nobody has to worry about making a mistake or wasting material. And
I know that was real important to me because
yeah.
I was such a novice at painting, and to just have my little Prang watercolor set and some rather cheap paper, I knew that I wasn't wasting.
Exactly. I'm glad you mentioned watercolor because I mentioned tempera paint a couple of times. The reason we used watercolors when we went to the Virgin Islands, where Rhoda was because it was lighter to carry. But we also had tubes of watercolor paint, white and yellow, which ordinarily the white doesn't come along in a watercolor set. And we used the watercolors in a very thick, opaque way. We didn't do watercolor technique. We used it in a very childlike, very simple way. So I just want the audience to know that.
Yeah, well, I've only had the one experience, but I have been reading your book. And so I'll say more about the book a little later.
Okay.
But now we've created the space, the sacred space. We've got the paints and we've got the paper. So what happens next?
Right. Well, one of the guidelines of this experience, and it's just a guideline, it's a suggestion. very often people, this is a strain for some people. But part of the idea is to stay in the same painting for the whole workshop, which is a really interesting experience. Now, one of the wonderful things is that the paint dries very quickly, so you can paint layers and layers if they need to be painted. Also, the paintings often grow. It's like a plant outgrowing its pot, and you have to transplant it in a bigger pot. So often, the painting is calling us to add papers on so that the painting that we started with can grow and expand.
That was one of the most amazing things, was how...
Right.
The painting grew, and how you would come along and say, well, now what's on the other side of this edge? And
exactly.
And it really kept you looking at your edges and how to move beyond that.
Exactly. Like, what is this hand reaching for? Or where does that road go?
Uh-huh.
Where does that lake or that river going? Or where does it come from?
I remember, Aviva, you kept saying, paint it as though you're going to burn it, or paint it as though you're going to destroy it, and that gave you a certain freedom, I know it did for me, to just go with whatever I wanted to do.
Exactly. In the beginning, that really is helpful.
But it is hard to stay with the same painting because our tendency is to not be satisfied and to just want to throw something away and start over.
I know. Or something happens accidentally, very quickly, that we love and we don't want to paint over it, which we don't have to, but we're afraid that we're going to lose it, or that will never happen again, and, oh, keep it simple. If I stay painting, I'm going to ruin it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just a really life process.
It is. It's like life. It really became like life.
Things happen. Mistakes happen.
Yeah.
It's like a relationship.
Yeah. You can't start over. You've just got to try to work with what you have and go forward.
Exactly. But isn't it amazing, Royda, how it was difficult in the beginning to keep staying in the same painting, but aren't you glad you did?
Oh, it was a life-changing experience for me, and I was amazed at how it ended up. But I also know in the middle of all this process, Aviva, I got very discouraged. I felt it was very chaotic and just felt like it was just a big mess. Is
typical
that pretty typical? Yeah,
right. That's a stage in the process, and that's a hard one for us. You know, we are not taught in our culture, in Western education, to how to be in the unknown, how to tolerate nothingness, how to tolerate not knowing. You know, being in that place of ambiguity, when everything's ambiguous before the new thing forms. It's really a birth, death, rebirth process. And I really help guide people in staying and midwifing them through that part of the birth process when the baby's still in the birth canal and it's really hard and you want to throw in the towel and you want to be given, you know, something to totally knock you out so you don't feel it. But staying with it, and just keeping on painting with the support of the group, it's quite extraordinary. Then what happens? You know, it's about taking a risk, and that's what opening up our creativity is. That little bit of the creative process, that staying in the chaos, that's what I call the death part. It's a symbolic death, is really like going through a birth and just breathing through it and staying with it.
Yeah, I think one of my biggest fears was that I was going to learn that I had no creativity. It was just a big muddy mess.
Right, right.
And then with your guidance and with the group and the different things that you call embodiments, can you talk a little bit about how you embody your painting?
Absolutely. Well, this is another aspect of the workshop that's offered to people. It's not mandatory. It's totally up to you if you want to give it a try. But at various points during the workshop, I invite people to express their painting and their inner process in other modalities besides painting. By other modalities, I mean body movement, spontaneous voice, using the group as your witnesses and even as your Greek chorus to reflect back to you. In the workshop I did this past weekend, when some people were doing this embodiment part, they were standing in front of their painting and moving and making sounds, but they instructed the group to, one group to make the sounds of birds and one part of the group to make the sound of birds and another part of the group to make the sounds of wind or drumming on their knees, tapping their knees. So it's extraordinary. It's about kind of standing in front of your painting and letting yourself, every painting has sounds and movement, but just letting yourself feel it without rehearsing and just for a moment experiencing that, letting the energy of the painting come through your body.
Mm-hmm.
And
And that was one
Isn't
of the...
Isn't that extraordinary?
That it was. And I really did feel like I entered my painting and it became a part of me, and I
right.
became a part of it.
Right.
And as a psychologist, I pay a lot of attention to all the senses, all the sensory modes in whatever is going on in our lives. You know, what it smells like, what it tastes like, what it feels like kinesthetically.
Right.
What we hear, as well as what we're feeling or thinking. And it seems like that's one of the secrets that you've found in helping people tap into the source, is to do it with all the senses.
Yes.
And
yes.
And that is so different than standing back and analyzing and criticizing whether or not you like what you've drawn or painted.
Right, right. And even, it's different than even telling the story, you know. And for some people, they tap right into it, and they move. And for many of us, the desire to speak in a linear way and explain and mm-hmm. interpret and analyze is really so strong. And it's such an experience for all of us to see how we can express on the body level.
Right.
And I even encourage people to make whatever sounds, not to hold back on sounds and movements while they're painting.
Right.
You know.
And I know that you encourage people to use other things, like things from nature or whatever they find that their painting wants. You keep talking about what does the painting want, or what does the paper call you to do, or what color wants to be on there.
Rather than what do you want.
Right. Yes. Rather than standing back and trying to plan it, it really does become a process inside
you. We actually get people to talk out loud to their paintings
uh-huh.
and say, you know, what color do you want now, or if there's an image on it, you know, what would you like to wear, where would you like to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, and actually have people become the image and out loud talk back to you, the painter, and say, well, I want a yellow umbrella, you know, or whatever, or I want a green earring, and be guided by the process, mm-hmm. not by your critical mind, mm-hmm. yeah.
Now,
it's a breath of fresh air in this culture we live in, and staying with it, you know, for so long, and doing the details. Where in our life do we take the time to just be in this deep meditative process?
Right, and in a nonverbal kind of process that you're getting out of your mind and coming to your senses in
exactly.
some ways, I think,
exactly.
as the old Gestalt therapist used right. to say. Now, Aviva...
Roy, there's one thing, you know, I just want the audience to know
uh-huh.
that even though when people start painting, I'll say paint as if you're going to burn it, that doesn't mean that at the end there isn't something that is born that you treasure. In other words, you know, we don't destroy it usually. Usually
yeah.
it's a treasured piece.
Absolutely.
A sacred treasured piece that people, it might not even be totally complete, that people keep on painting on for, you know, for a very long time before going to a new paper.
Right.
Right.
Now, I know that what I observed, that part of your role is a very therapeutic role in skillfully helping people explore their own inner psyches, their own inner being, to do some healing and transformation during this process. How do you see this as the same or different from art therapy?
Well, first let me say that all creativity is therapeutic and healing.
Mm-hmm.
Painters, singers, dancers, actors, playwrights, throughout history, since the beginning of time, were healed and renewed by doing their creativity. Some people who had really strong emotional problems were kept sane by their creativity. I know there's mythology about, you know, the crazy artist and that creativity makes you crazy. It's absolutely the opposite. I know this like as if I know I'm alive, that the people who may have been bizarre and acted strange. It's more that the creativity kept them sane. And it was also about the creativity not being really real, authentic creativity, not being supported by our culture that is so disturbing to artists, but and to anybody who creates. But one of the big things that guides me is the myth of Beauty and the Beast, and that guides me as a healer. Well, let me see. You asked, how is it different from art therapy? The way art therapy is traditionally taught, and it's a new teaching. It's only about 20 years old in the schools, 25 years old, is using more the medical model, using it for healing psychological trauma, not seen as a sacred a piece in itself. I, and just more in a cathartic way, and in psychiatric settings and in working with children with difficulties and with medical populations or populations that are having problems, it is a wonderful tool. I add to it a spiritual component, and also the component as of my training as a an art educator and painter myself. And I believe that when you channel the source, your paintings, if you stay with them and you work through the blocks that come up and whatever beasts may appear and the chaos, as you brought up, and if you keep on staying with it, you will naturally come out with a piece that sings with authenticity and beauty, and is art. So there's not that, such a focus on going to that, through that, what I call the death layer in most art therapy trainings. And the basic idea here is, me using that myth of Beauty and the Beast, that every image that we think is out to get us, that we think is our destroyer, our monster, our beast, both in our paintings and in our dreams and in our lives, with people in our lives who we think, are out to get us, like especially people that we're married to, or people who are family members, that there is a piece of the prince of our greatest healing in these aspects of ourselves. And they're all mirrors of parts of ourselves. And that if we allow them to express themselves and say what is ailing them, then the transformation happens, and it's healing to that part of ourself. So we integrate, so to speak, all our lost children, all of our unconscious archetypes that we're not aware of. They come out automatically in the painting and embodiment process. And instead of burying them and painting over them, putting a Band-Aid on them, taking a pill to get rid of them, we invite them in because we know that our diamonds, our pearls, the most deepest creative part of our soul lies in those creatures. And we want to mine them. We want to, find them and allow the images to transform and transmute into their next form, like a caterpillar into a butterfly.
Oh, that's really beautiful. And since this is a show about women's creativity, I know that I just have no doubt that most all of the participants in your workshops are women. Why do you think that is, that women are the ones that are drawn to this kind of creative work?
Right. I just want to say something really interesting. Lately, there are a few more men than used to be. I would say, on the whole, it's been about 10% men. And it's creeping up a little bit lately, which I'm really grateful for there. And I think that that's the influence of women you know, and maybe the women's movement and consciousness about the importance of developing the feminine side in men. So I'm hoping that that's it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have been asked that question so many times. I also want to say that the men that do come to the workshop are quite extraordinary, as you can imagine, you know, mm-hmm. and have their feminine side really develop. I think that men in our culture have been trained not to show their vulnerable, sensitive side. And there's you know, it's usually unconscious, just a little fear of being in that situation that they may, maybe that they may not be able to work in the world or perform or, you know, keep a stiff upper lip and, you know, in the ways that they feel that they've been trained they have to do to provide for a family. Mm-hmm. So I hope that that changes because it will make for a happier world and better, you know, better relationships.
Well, I know you've been conducting your workshops and doing your teaching all over the world. You were in New Zealand recently, and and you hope to go to other parts of the world to bring this kind of work and healing. What are some of the ways in which you've seen transformation and healing happen in the participants in your workshops?
You mean certain universal things?
Yeah. That, mm-hmm. Or if you have some individual stories, that would
be
wonderful.
Well, you know, it constantly amazes me and pleases me that it's pretty much the same everywhere. When I have painted, well, I went on a trek in Nepal many, many years ago, and I brought some watercolors. And at one point, I gave some paper and the watercolor painting and brushes to the Sherpas, the native men who were carrying our gear. And many of them had never been exposed to these materials before. And it was all men. And they took to it like a duck to water. I mean, there was, you know, I didn't have to say anything. They just played. They just painted, you know, just heart-touching paintings. Of course, I left the materials with them. You know, I gave it to them. And it was really interesting to me to see how, you know, there was a language barrier. I couldn't really talk to them very much, you know, anyway. And just how, you know, men coming from such a different culture, who just grew up with nature, and it was just so wonderful to see how they played and also they would make a fire at night and they would dance and sing and they would dance with each other. You know, it was just, that was really very, very sweet. If we have a few minutes left, though.
We're getting close to time for a break, and I do plan to have a couple of other people on, local people that
okay,
are doing
well,
similar work.
I just want to say that it's very empowering for women to do this, to get into your wild woman archetype. And just to be in your Earth Mother archetype, and just very, very empowering it was to me,
mm-hmm.
right? And to see the feminine face of God through my painting.
Well, I'm talking to Aviva Goel, who has a book called Painting from the Source, Awakening the Artist's Soul in Everyone. It was published in 2002. And Aviva, you have a website where people can actually see some of the painting and know more about what you're doing. Can you give us that
Absolutely.
Website?
Absolutely, and can see my schedule. It's www.paintingfromthesource.org. Just spell it as it's all one word, paintingfromthesource.org. www.thewomenvoice.org.
All right. And we're so excited that you are coming to Columbia and in October. And your schedule is up on your website. If anyone's interested in knowing more, you can go to Aviva's website. That's www.paintingfromthesource.org. Or you can always contact me here at the station, KOPN, at www.kopn.org. I'm Aroita Kroos, and it's time for us to take a break now. Aviva, I appreciate your spending this time. I know you're tired after doing a weekend workshop and taking time to record this show for us to play a little later on.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. Is there any final words that you have that we didn't cover?
No, just everybody pick up a piece of paper and some crayons and play.
All right. Thank you for the work you do in the world, and we'll see you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
You're very welcome.